Hello and welcome to Good Sex, Bad Sex. This is a podcast from metro.co.uk.
It's a bit like a sex guide, but this is the oral version. My name is Bibi Lynch.
I'm Miranda Kane.
We have got such a fabulous guest. She is the disability consultant and brand ambassador for disability startup Handy. And her name is Katie Venables.
Hi, I'm Katie. I'm brand ambassador for Handy, and I co-edited, co-curated and contributed to the Handy Book of Love, Lust and Disability.
Welcome to Good Sex, Bad Sex, disability consultant and brand ambassador for disability startup Handy and co-editor, co-curator, co-writer of the Handy Book of Love, Lust and Disability is Katie Venables.
Hey! Hello.
How are you?
Tell us about this fabulous book.
Okay. Yeah, it is a fabulous book. So it's the Handy Book of Love, Lust and Disability, co-authored by 50 disabled contributors from all over the world with all different types of disabilities, hidden and visible. And it talks about all aspects of human sexuality, really. And it just so happens that the thing that these people have in common is disability, it kind of turns out at the end, because we just found that the themes were kind of so universal to everybody that read it, everybody who turned their eyes to it, that it doesn't really feel like a book specifically for disabled people or only about the disabled experience, really. But
what kind of stuff did you cover then in the book?
So we've got all kinds of things from body image, masturbation. We looked at sex work, people who use sex workers, people who are sex workers. We also looked at society's perceptions of sexuality and disability and the ways that those perceptions can also be internalised by the disabled community as well. So if we're not expected to be sexy or to have fulfilling sex lives, how do those kind of internalised messages prevent us having the best sex that we could be having? But also how, once you learn how to let go of those things, you can empower both yourself and other people to have much better sex.
Was that something you experienced?
Yeah, definitely. I think the best thing for my self-confidence and for my sex life has been letting go of societal expectations of beauty in the bedroom in particular. Like, we're also terrified of getting naked, aren't we? And oh god, what if the one person that I know finds me beautiful and attractive, what if they suddenly change their mind, you know? What if I take my clothes off and they're like, oh actually no, never mind, I'll call
now
you. But once you kind of letting go of that kind of, oh no, what do other people think of me? What do other people think of how sexy I am and what that means? I was able to concentrate on what I find sexy about me, but also frame that so that when I'm in those moments, I don't have to think about it. That's the thing. I think getting that confidence is just totally letting go. So not that you're thinking, oh, I am the best. I always knew secretly deep down I was the very best at sex in the world. It's not about that. It's about just letting yourself completely be in those moments with that careful person or people, whoever, and just truly letting yourself experience.
And as you said, that's a lesson to everyone.
Yeah.
Disabled, non-disabled. We'll talk about more of that in a minute, about what, you know, because you and I talked about, you know, what we feel, what you feel that non-disabled people can learn from this book. But I'm really interested in your experiences. How have you been made to feel that you weren't beautiful? How have you been made, you know, and is that across the board for disabled people? That they're not sexual.
Yeah, well, there's, I mean, something we've talked about a lot before is representation, isn't it? And how if we don't ever see ourselves, if we're never projected to the world as beautiful or attractive or something desirable even, you do take that on board. And for example, people are talking about it even gets into your sexual fantasies where people are able-bodied in their fantasies even,
really?
And not even realized until somebody asked them to think about it. And it's because, you know, if you think about porn, if you think about what you see or, you know, on television in rom-coms or all the way through to more sort of progressive types of shows, it's never a disabled person that's the object of that desire, if they ever are. It's through a kind of weird fetishized lens quite regularly, or there's something wrong with the person that fancies them.
Yeah.
or the disabled person is expected to cure the you know, the not very nice able-bodied person of whatever. There's these kind of few lenses that we're allowed to be perceived through. But certainly objects of sexual desire isn't one of them.
You know, so you need to kind of just let go of caring about that. But that's such a simple sentence and incredibly
important. Yeah, just do it. Just stop now. Just stop it. Pack it in. No, it's not that easy. And I do think part of it is being forced through it, whether that's through a physical barrier, so that stops you from feeling sexy, like you might not feel sexy if you're in pain constantly. Or you might not feel sexy if you're coming to terms with grief or loss or something like that to do with your body. So how do you get through it? So I think my introduction to it was actually through fat phobia. So I was a lot fatter than I was disabled growing up, for example, or at least other people let me know I was fat a lot more than they let me know that I was disabled. And I think when you face that, and again, when there's so little representation of being a sexy fat person, you already have had that taken away from you, and you have to learn, right, I'm either going to just never feel sexy again, never enjoy my life again, spend every minute thinking about how sad I am I'm fat, or I'm going to get on with it. I'm going to find things that do make me feel sexy. I'm going to put on an outfit and let myself feel good rather than weeping about not wanting to eat salad. You know, I'm going to find a way through. And you do. And it's exactly the same when you lose mobility or, you know, I said before, you might not feel sexy if you're in pain constantly. Wait long enough and you will. You know, it's just another thing that's kind of assimilated into your human experience. Okay, so now constant pain is part of it. Well, I still feel happy, sad, sexy, horny, rejected, shameful. You know, it doesn't stop. It's not one or the other, is it? It's the way we as humans are multifaceted and are complex, and having a disability or looking different or whatever it is outwardly doesn't change the fact that we're always going to have a fully rounded experience when you walk in or roll in around on the planet, isn't it?
I think it's so interesting you bring up fat phobia, because everything you were just saying earlier about how when you're shown on TV, you're not allowed to be the love interest. You're always the, like, as a fat person, you're always the funny fat friend.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just so fascinating, like, talking about how it can resonate with people who aren't disabled or who aren't disabled yet. You know, yeah. Like, this is always something that can happen to someone in the future. Your body isn't going to be, you know, working forever. Do you know what I mean? So it's just so, and like, well, for me, I found like camaraderie and doing things like reading books and finding other people in the same situation was really important to me, was how I overcame fat phobia and how I learned to love my body and start talking about myself and things like that. So I think, like, yeah, that's why books like this are so important, because it is representation. The more you see other people who look like you and reflect you, the more it helps you to overcome that kind of fetishization, because again, it's the same with like fat phobia. Yeah. Like, you can get fetishized, can't you?
And absolutely.
And it's so shocking. You're both such sexy women. You know, gorgeous, sexy women. It's like, and it's so horrible if you haven't felt that. You know,
it's not fair, is it?
To- It's no, shit.
It's not fair.
It's and terrible.
Like, just because of somebody, you know, doesn't, you know, was born lucky enough to have a symmetrical face and be genetically predisposed to thinness and whiteness and conforming to everything, that doesn't mean that they deserve to feel that thing more than other people that weren't born like that.
Katie, you know can I ask? So you said something earlier about grief, and I thought it was really interesting how you phrased it about grief, about your body, about your body not working. Can I ask what your disability is, and were you more able-bodied? If I get this to any terminology wrong, I really apologise if I upset, if I offend anyone. Were you more able-bodied? So are you in a position to talk about sex before and now?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's... I was born with my condition. It's called hypermobile Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. What that means is I've got a connective tissue disorder. So mostly widespread joint pain is how my pain characterizes itself. My joints go out of place quite a lot, so that can be quite painful. But there's also other sort of early, for me personally, I've been dealing with a lot of spinal issues for the past couple of years. I'm just getting over spinal surgery now to deal with a really bad sciatica I had for 18 months, actually, of waking up because I was in pain and then trying to fight going to sleep at night because I was in so much pain, like all day, just in the middle. But, you know, like we said before, we still get on with stuff. But, yeah, it was... it was intense. So I'm getting better after that now, which is another new phase. So we kind of go through these phases of disability. But going back to what you were saying, when it comes to grief, I think the best thing that I ever learned for myself when it comes to disability and grief is that a lot of people with chronic illness will end up in the sort of five stages of grief. In a continuous loop kind of forever, and some of those stages are easier than others. Some of them take more of a mental toll on you, but the reason I say that is because I guess the first thing you need to do is come to terms with the idea that your life might not be exactly what you expected it was going to be, and everybody has to come to terms with that eventually, right? I mean, that's part of growing up and getting older, but you might be kind of faced and confronted with that at a much younger age. So I think I was kind of 22, 23 when I realised, oh, okay, I'm not going to not be in pain again. And that's the first thing. And then when I got to 24, 25, it was like, oh, okay, I'm not going to be going out regularly without a wheelchair again. And then there's these extra things, as you know, oh, okay, I'm not going to be seeing that friend. I'm not going to be having that certain type of career I can't go to. That nightclub until they bother putting in an elevator or whatever it is. There's certain expectations that you have to let go of a bit sooner than you might otherwise. But then there's also the kind of the uncertainty that enters in a lot sooner as well. So you're certain that you're not going to be able to do that. And so you're having to grieve that, but then you also don't know, am I going to find something that's going to make me better? So am I going to have to be pulled out of that grief cycle again for a little bit and then only to re-enter at a whole new level? So for example, with this blooming surgery I've just had, so the 18 months or so I have, but every week I'm having multiple medical appointments, constantly trying to get somebody to tell me, oh, we know what's wrong with you, or we can help you, or they do, and they go, oh, I reckon, no, oh, no, actually, sorry, no, love, we've got no idea. So it's just this kind of, just you do end up getting put into stages of, you know, acceptance, stages of denial, stages of, you know, oh, I'm going to do all this exercise because somebody else has promised me it's the cure. You know, that's the other thing that's so dangerous, is people get suckered into believing things are going to be the cure because, God, we want it to be, you know?
So the book, I mean, it does the book a great disservice to say it's a sex guide, because there's stuff about sex, but in what you've just been talking about, that's all mental health, that's all acceptance or struggling with acceptance and all those things, you know, they will all have an impact on your libido, on feeling sexual, because that, you know, it's depression, it's whatever, anxiety, it's whatever else it is, it's pain. And all these kind of things are covered in the book as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, we're talking to people in different stages of their lives, different stages of their grief cycles, you know, in different, all different types of disability. And so what we're getting is this amazing cross section where it's kind of, no matter where you're coming in, you're going to be able to learn something new, learn an experience that you didn't know about before. But I also think people are going to find themselves relating to a hell of a lot more than they were expecting to.
So when you and I have chatted before, and I love what you were saying about this, that you really think there are kind of, or maybe six things that everyone can learn from this book. So, you know, disabled people and non-disabled. So should we go through them?
Mm. Yeah, that sounds good.
Sex isn't what you think it is.
Discuss, Katie Venables.
Discuss. Oh, gosh. No, so sex doesn't have to be what you think it is. And I think this is something that comes up time and time and again. We all have this kind of set prescriptive thing of what sex is, what sex should be. Yeah.
For the listeners at home, I just stuck my finger through a hole I made through my thumb and my forefinger.
And made a beautiful face. I wish everyone could have seen your face.
I think we should all be grateful that she was using her own thumb and forefinger this time, because it's not always the case.
And it doesn't always have to be penetrative. It doesn't always have to end in orgasm. It doesn't have to involve kissing. It doesn't have to involve somebody else. You know, it can be, you need to redefine sexual pleasure on your own terms as much as you can. And if you can find a partner or partners to really help you fulfill what you want from sex, then that's the most important thing. But you've got to know what that is for you to begin with, haven't you?
What was point number two, Miranda?
Communicate.
Communicate, Katie.
Yeah. Well, again, this is another one of those, well, duh, kind of moments. But it is one of those where it's the same for everybody. If you talk about what you like in bed with the person that you're going to be having sex with, you're going to have a better time. If you don't talk about what you do and don't like before you get in the bedroom, or if you just kind of try and communicate indirectly or just not in the same way that the other person is able to communicate, then you're going to have a bad time, and or at least not as good as it could be.
Do you mean
post-its?
I mean stick post-its everywhere you want to be touched.
It's also like it's a consent. Communication is consensual, and it can also, like, a lot of people are like, oh, but doesn't that ruin it? And it's like, no, that can also be part of the build-up, isn't it? It's like saying, oh, I love to do this, or I love to do that. You know, it's like it's all part of it, and it can also, just be a real key to consent.
Would someone, they don't want to hurt you, they'd be scared.
Absolutely. I think that can be the same, again, for a lot of people, especially maybe if you're into kink, but you're also a small woman, maybe people are also scared, you know, oh, but she's so fragile, she simply must be, you know, there's this kind of, this preconceived judgment. And absolutely, the only way you're going to get past that is by telling somebody, like, I don't want you to be gentle with me, or you don't need to be gentle with me, or only in this certain way, or for a certain minute. And the only way that you're going to be able to have good sex is to
communicate.
Miranda,
number three.
Is this going to be, sorry, I'm going to ask this might be a really personal question, sorry.
Please.
But honestly, just say, but do you ever get people that are like, oh, well, you're disabled, so do you have any feeling down there?
Oh my God, yeah. We have a whole section on the book of sexual ableism. And we were going to have an entire chapter of dumbass questions people ask us. And so not so much me, because I present as or quite able-bodied, or I used to when we were allowed outside. But my friend one of the founders of Handy, Andrew, has cerebral palsy and has always used a power chair. And people will regularly think it's all right to ask him, you know, hey, does your dick work? And what he pointed out is, what the fuck is the right answer to that question?
It's like, get it out and spunk all over them.
Right. It's just... But then they'll probably complain about consent and all.
Probably.
No. But he has ended up coming up with daft answers to point out the absurdity of the question. But, you know, if he says yes, you know, it's like, do they get to go home feeling better about themselves? Or and if he says no, is it going to be like, as I suspected, you know, and you walk off and carry about their day there? I just don't know what people are thinking when they ask these kind of insensitive questions, in the same way that I wouldn't walk up to someone in the street and be like, do you always look like that, babe? You know, it's like, are you sure about that? Are you sure about that coat with those shit? You don't do it. It's rude. So
it's
just
rude.
It's rude. So people just need to, I think, keep their sensible hats on when talking to disabled people. But also just the way these ignorant questions are going to leave people feeling after they get asked such a personal question. And you, people love to, it's a slightly different thing, but every cab I've been in, if I'm using my crutches, I always get asked, oh, what's wrong with you?
Oh.
Or, well, what have you done? That's the other one. Nothing, still nothing. But it makes you feel like there's something wrong with you, or like that is the first thing that somebody's noticed about you, even if it's just somebody trying to make conversation, which I appreciate, you know, as a cabbie, you're going to have to try and do 6,000 times a day or whatever it is. Yeah. So you're picking out, but just because something's salient to you doesn't mean that that's the first thing you pick out. That's what you're taught at school, right?
I think a whole chapter on just how to answer these stupid questions
is a brilliant idea.
An absolutely brilliant book.
Even the book. Yeah,
it's a whole book on it.
You know what I just thought, Miri? Mm. We shouldn't make Katie say all of the points, because Katie's starring in a feature in Metro newspaper, our sister publication to our website, on February the 4th, and it's a whole feature about it. So we won't give everything away, but I do love the idea of Miri, you touched on earlier.
Who wrote the feature, BB?
No. Oh, just some Dame BB Lynch. Dame. I don't know, she's fabulous.
So weird how...
It's all beautiful. It all comes together beautifully. Oh God, unlike
Favourite
us.
It's my favourite.
finally came together. But what I'm saying is, but Miri, you said something earlier, which is true, which was some people are non-disabled now, but they won't necessarily be that way later.
Yeah,
and
your body's
Katie, you said that. You know now that disabled people are sexual people, because this might be you soon.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a statistic that, so 80% of disabled people were not born disabled. So that's 80% of us. This has happened to at some point or another, or it has progressed in some way or another. And it could be, and it might be you one day, exactly the same way with, you know, we were talking about those lucky, perfect people earlier. If they do exist, you know, what a fall from grace they've got to try and deal with, if you go from being the best, the most beautiful. If it's simply just aging out, it's going to happen to all of us. It's going to happen to, and the quicker you get on board with that. So, yeah, I don't see it as a bad thing that I've been forced to accept these things, because I'm going into my 30s already comfortable with being my version of sexy rather than everybody else's. And I do know that's very lucky.
Yeah.
That's a big deal. So a lot of people don't get that. And exactly what you say, you have to kind of, you know, we will all change in whatever way. And that change is often not societally seen as attractive. And so whatever it is, being just getting older or, you know, disability, it's something we will have to accept. You know, I know that you talk about the most exciting partnership you've ever encountered, and I know, and it's not me and Miranda, and that's a bit hurtful, but it's Love Honey and Handy. So Love funny. Honey are selling the book, and I love, there's this bit of blurb here, Miri, you'll love this.
I just wanted to, if you could explain what Handy is, first of all, just so we know.
Handy is the first sex toy company designing toys for disabled people by disabled people. The company was founded by brother and sister, Andrew Gersey, who I mentioned earlier, who's got cerebral palsy. And during a conversation, it was his able-bodied sister that realised that he hadn't been able to masturbate when he was a teenager by still having, you know, exactly the same sexual urges, wants and needs as any other teenage boy. And that had been very difficult for him. Still now, there wasn't anything that was helping him to achieve orgasm on his own. They put their skills together and they started Handy. And ever since then, they've been prototyping toys, but also smashing taboos around sex and disability.
And that's the whole point with you and getting you on as an ambassador, and with Love Honey. So Love Honey, everyone knows their Friends Oath podcast, it's sexual wellness brand, brilliant sexual wellness brand. And they've kind of got together with Handy, and the book's available through Love Honey, isn't it? That's a brilliant endorsement. That must be hugely exciting.
It's incredibly exciting, not just because, you know, it means that the toys and the book can get out there, but it's about that representation that we were talking about earlier, to have such a big brand, what, like the third biggest sex toy brand in the world, I think, to have standing behind our book written by, you know, by disabled people, for disabled people, shining a brand new light on the ways in which disability and sexuality interplay. Honestly, I think, you know, I'm going to be biased, the best representation of sex and disability I've consumed. And I was speaking to you about it before, Bibi, like it has helped me enormously on a personal level, purely through going, oh, there's at least 50 other people that I can completely get on board with. And since then, you know, through online communities and things like that, learning more about all these different areas of sex, sexuality and disability and human experience, like we said before.
You said to me as well before, and this is so brilliant, Mary, that the case, you spotted some of the contributors in a Love Honey Instagram campaign looking incredible in their lingerie and everything, and it just made you feel, well, you said that it made you feel really emotional.
It did, and it still does. That you're not expecting, you're never expecting to see a disabled person sort of pop up halfway through, you know, a very, very sexy outfit. And then when they do, and it's somebody that we've worked with in the book, because you really feel like you get such a personal piece of everybody in the book, that to know their struggle, especially as the editor, like having read everything, like knowing their personal struggles, what they've been through, and then also seeing them being the representation that they've so often been dying out for, crying out for, is it does make me really emotional, and it makes me think that we're definitely on the way to something good.
It just makes you imagine like a little you, like from 20 years ago, you, if you could have 10, 20 years ago, looked at the same Instagram feed or on a, you know, online and seen that, imagine that, what that would have meant to you. You know, that's how I think about it.
Absolutely. And I think there's a huge crossover again with sort of the online fat community and the online disabled community, where we are being the representation for each other now. We are being the people that we needed growing up and we can show each other, because we're still on that kind of self-love journey together. We all are somewhere, aren't we? And we can't go back and give it to the child versions of ourselves, but we can still tend to that child in us that is still scared and still doesn't feel pretty enough or like anyone's ever going to fancy them or whatever it is. We can be that for each other.
Yeah.
What's your aim for the book, Katie?
I said from the beginning that my personal aim was to make disabled people feel less alone. And that sounds very noble, but I think it, but in a place where there is such a void of representation, you do feel alone unless there is somebody sat next to you going, you know, come on.
It's the Handybook of Love, Lust and Disability, and it's available now, Miranda Kane, from the sexual wellness brand Love Honey at lovehoney.co.uk.
Fantastic.
Miranda, what did you say?
Oh, I thought that was so interesting. It's so, like, weird, like, not weirdly relatable, because it is relatable. And it is that thing, like, because I've heard it say a couple of times before, where you're not disabled yet. And it's so important to realise that. And especially when it comes to all those stupid questions that people ask her, you know, like, oh, do you have any feelings? And it's just like, oh my God, how would you feel if someone just came up to you and randomly said all that? And I think there's going to be a lot in this book that anyone could learn from, definitely.
Yeah, I don't want to plug my own work again, but it's Katie's work. But I interviewed Katie for Metro, and it's February 4th, it's out, the paper Metro, and she, it's great, and the whole thing is about how non-disabled people can learn from this book too, which I don't want to take away from the fact that disabled people, it's for disabled people, and they're going to get masses from it, but, you know, it's acceptance, isn't it? Acceptance and communication, I guess, are the key things.
Yeah, and representation.
Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah.
And representation. Hey, Miranda.
Yeah, who are you?
Phoebe Lynch, who are you?
Miranda Kane.
Hey, Good Sex, Bad Sex was produced by Juliet Nichols for metro.co.uk.
You can get in touch with us on Twitter at Good Sex, Bad Sex. So that's got triple X at the end, and on our Instagram, which is the same address, but without the triple X at the end.
And also, if you've got a sexy question or query, or there's a guest or topic who you'd love us to chat to or about, get in touch, info@sexpod.co.uk.
And we will see you all next week in a mere 7 days' time.